Welcome to the Chase Down Podcast, brought to you by Blue Wire. I'm your host, Justin Rowan. Carter Rodriguez has left me for LA, where he will undoubtedly be unsuccessful, as one that does that typically is. So to replace him today, we got fan favorite Ryan Morton joining us on the podcast. Mort, how's it going, buddy?
I'm good. How you doing, man?
I'm not too bad. I had a long day. I spent a long time waiting for that free healthcare today, which is the downside of the free healthcare, but I'm doing all right. I'm on medication. Should be all good now.
Subtle healthcare flex.
I figured I'd rub it in whenever I can, because with the way the Cavs are playing right now, there's not a whole lot of things to point to that are positive. After what I thought were encouraging losses to Toronto and Minnesota, where the team just didn't roll over and die when they fell behind, they come out looking strong, looking to support my narratives against Atlanta, and then everything just kind of went to shit. What were you thinking as that game completely fell apart?
These guys are buns. I mean, it really felt like every single problem that was evident, and a lot of them are evident, you know, but it brought all of them right to the forefront. Mm-hmm. Chief among them, like, the Cavs don't have anyone who is elite at anything, right?
Right.
Trae Young is not an elite player, but he put on an elite shooting performance that night. And, man.
It was a tough reminder that Trae Young didn't fall to the Cavs in the draft, because I don't know about you heading in, but I really wanted him, because I was like, at the very least, this kid's And
he's creepy looking, man. I mean, he's probably really good. He probably looks better than me, but creepy little dude.
That was the main hang up with his pre-draft thoughts.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I never really considered him, because I didn't think the Cavs would be there, but you know me, he's wiry and he'll probably
be there. I just like point guards that can shoot, and he has tremendous vision as a passer as well. But what really kind of bothered me was just all the creative players for Atlanta that were hitting these threes. Like, I'm okay with Trae Young going off, because I can comprehend him going 6 of 14. But I have no idea what an Omari Spellman is.
That is Cleveland's own Omari Spellman.
Oh, well, there you go. And Bembry as well also went off from three, and it was just so disheartening, because it felt like everything they were throwing up, they were hitting. And the Cavs, after looking pretty good offensively in the other games, it seemed like the absence of a clear hierarchy on this team is kind of leading guys to be too passive at times and then just do their own thing in isolation at other times. Like, but Rodney Hood, for example, everything he did kind of came separate from the flow of the offense. Jordan Clarkson was really effective, but again, everything he does is kind of outside the flow of the offense. So I'm glad there's a bit of a break here before they play against Brooklyn, where they can get some practice in. Because I don't think they're as bad as they look right now, but it's pretty clear that this isn't a good team.
Yeah, I mean, so everything that they have to do to be passable in one area is going to make them pretty bad, I think, is what we're seeing, right? Because they can't defend in transition at all. This is not surprising. It's been an issue for years. Right. And it's a problem you get when you have a mostly unathletic team. In comparison, anyway. But so if they were to slow it down to compensate for that, they don't have the offensive talent to score with any of these teams. So, like, you know, you have to run it up and have a lot of possessions. That makes sense. But you don't have an elite ball handler. You don't have anyone that's going to break somebody down off the dribble. Mm-hmm. So you know, what they're doing to compensate for that, the dribble handoffs and the side-to-side motion makes also a ton of sense.
It makes sense, but it seems like it's tough for them to consistently go to that. And when things kind of start to go a little sideways, they seem to abandon those type of sets that were generating pretty decent looks. But, I mean, at the same time, it's not like their offense has been terrible. Like, the Raptors are probably going to wind up being one of the best defensive teams in the league. Minnesota and Atlanta probably aren't going to be that good defensively, but like in all three games, the Cavs put up a respectable amount of points. They just can't defend anybody. Like, they look completely clueless on how to defend a role man in every single situation, and you can't make Alex Len look that good.
Yeah, I mean, they have no idea, and that's kind of where I was going to. Like, you know, they get the way the offense is ran is a lot of guys that, like, you know, jumpers 17 feet and in, Jordan Clarkson, Rodney Hood, Colin Sexton has shown an appreciation for those. George Hill, like, everyone wants a jump shot in the 15 to 17 foot range, or they're at the rim, and their floor balance is awful. Like, they have no idea how to rebalance the floor once these guys are getting, you know, they're crashing into the bucket. They're missing a lot, so there's a fight for offensive rebounds. So they're constantly in transition, and when they're defending, I mean, in the half court in general, they've been okay. The Hawks obviously tore it apart because they have, like you said, they have no idea what to do with a role man when the point guard can shoot. I mean, we saw Kyle Lowry tear them up. We saw Trae Young tear them up.
It's funny. George Hill is basically just out there to take good shots so that his stats look good. Like, he looks like a dead man walking out there, and that's a lot of what he looked like in Sacramento too. Because in Sacramento, you look at his numbers and they're good. He shot like over 40% from three, 45% from the floor, but took care of the ball. But he's not going to do anything more than the bare minimum. And he's a guy that just looks like he wants out of here as soon as possible and has very, very little interest in being a mentor to Colin Sexton.
Yeah. And I mean, I get it. He's 32. It's not what he signed up for, but it's brutal. You know?
Well, to be fair, what he signed up for was a big contract in Sacramento. So this was what he signed up for. He just happened to get traded to a better situation. But he is 100% in the situation he signed up for.
Then he wound up right where he was to begin with. Yeah. Well, that's like, man, there's just no, you know, there's just no way to fix, at least in my opinion. You know, they'll play better, but, like, how do you fix what really ails the Cavs, which is the roster is not cohesive.
Right.
You know, they don't have a high-end shooter other than Kyle Korver, who's 37, Channing Frye, who's also 37, or maybe
30. Yeah, and more importantly, out of the rotation.
Yeah, well, yeah, I mean, you can't, you know, you want to run it up. You can't play Channing and Kyle in 110 possession ball games. They're not.
So, speaking of guys that can theoretically play the four, what's your impression of Sam Decker? Because now we have a quota of needing to say some mean shit to Sam Decker in every one of these podcasts. So what's kind of your impression of him after three games? Because I need to get your Sam Decker take.
You know, I thought he played well against the Hawks.
Yeah. Yeah, that was a good game from him, but as I said on Twitter, it frustrates me whenever he does something good because I feel like it's going to prolong the amount of time it takes before he's inevitably benched, which is what I
think. I get that. I mean, I'm not, you know, it's not like there's anything that he's preventing, though, right? Like, well, I want to see David Nwaba, and a lot of people say, why don't we play Nwaba? I mean, Nwaba's 6'4". You're not going to play him at power forward.
Right, but the Hawks were going small, and my thing consistently has been, too, if you're going to play a theoretical stretch forward that can actually shoot, you might as well just give those minutes to Larry Nance, and then at least you open up some time for Zizic. I mean, you don't have to open up minutes for Zizic. I think Tristan and Nance are guaranteed to miss a couple games throughout the year. And he's going to get some opportunities. He's looked kind of fine out there, but it's not the end of the world if you're not buying him time. But my point is, if you're already going with someone that can't shoot there, you might as well just go with Larry Nance, because he can at least command some attention with his athleticism and his ability to find passing lanes off ball.
Well, I think they think he can shoot. And I think that they're clearly encouraging him to shoot. He's getting the ball a lot, and they, you know, are actively telling him to shoot it. And they're putting him in those spots mm-hmm. that Kevin was in a lot in previous years. I think that was the goal. They got him for free from the Clippers, basically, you know, for the sole purpose of seeing if they could find something. I feel like it's at least 2 months out, maybe a month, I guess, and moves a lot quicker than it feels like in the NBA. But, you know, I feel like they feel he can shoot, and I don't know. I mean, Nance is a power forward. That's the other thing. Like, they're three best players at this point. Well, okay, three of their four best players. Jetty's probably their second best player, which is a very nice thing and also a sign that they're very bad.
At this point, after three games, I would probably put Tristan just above him, just because TT can contribute on the defensive end, and he's kind of looking more like himself. But Jetty certainly has a higher – like, his high watermark is higher than what Tristan can do, because Tristan is just a role player, right?
Yeah, and here nor there. You know, if you name their four best players, we would all name the same four people: Kevin Love, Jetty Osman, Tristan Thompson, and Larry Nance. And three of those guys probably play the same position. So,
not ideal. Not ideal at all. You're not putting your boy Rodney Hood in there?
I don't know, man. He's so frustrating to me. Like, and I know he can be better, and he probably will, but I don't know.
I just don't know what to do with him, because he's got the talent, but I just don't know what the Cavs could possibly do, or any team for that matter, to consistently get him more engaged, because that seems to be the problem. Is there's certain times where he's just not home.
Yeah, he's like a robot, right? Like, he's just like mechanically and soullessly moving about the court, and watching him really frustrates me, because there's no, I don't know, man. And it's been like that the whole time he's here. Maybe he doesn't like it here. He says otherwise, but I mean, they're finding him in good spots, and for them to be good, he needs to be a guy that's scoring close to 20 points a game.
Right.
Another warning sign that everyone probably picked up on the offseason. And he's just not. And when Jetty Osman is your second leading scorer, well, when your first leading scorer is shooting barely 30%, that's a big problem. And then your second leading scorer is Jetty, and it just hasn't been good. Like,
The frustrating thing for me is, like, what I wanted from this season, and I don't know if I've really gone kind of your full take on what you were hoping for going into this year, but what I wanted was for the young guys to be in position to learn and to make mistakes, at least in the process of trying to get better. Like, what I liked about those first two games against Toronto and Minnesota was, even when they fell behind, you could tell that they were still trying to get into their sets. They were trying to run the offense. They ended up coming back in both of those games and at least making it respectable. And that's what I want from the season. Like, I don't care about the result. The loss ultimately is probably going to benefit the team in the long term. But I want those losses to come in the service of trying to get better and trying to develop Jetty and Colin more than anybody. But the Atlanta game, like, that was just a loss because of terrible execution, everyone falling apart, and nobody really knowing what to do. And I'm hopeful that it won't consistently look like that. But those are going to be the games that frustrate me more than the first two games of the season.
Yeah. My outlook was always that the team is poised, and I think I've put it in several different spots. You know, the team is poised to be pretty bad. And if they're not, it will be fun to watch. Like, the things that have to go right for them to be good are Rodney Hood has a good season, Jetty Osmond has a really good season, you know, Kevin Love returns to being that top 20-ish player. Larry Nance and Tristan Thompson are also very good. So Minnesota and Toronto, kind of like you were saying, were fine. You know, you saw a lot of Jetty, you saw the Minnesota game. You know, Colin, when his game is on, it's electric, and that was extremely exciting to watch.
Yeah.
And Atlanta was more of a reality check insofar as the Cavs have a lot of things to clear out. Like, you don't want to play Clarkson, and this is one I've struggled with a lot. And, you know, everyone wants Clarkson just gone, right? They want him out of the rotation.
I don't fall in that camp, to be clear. I don't. I think him as kind of a bench option, it's fine. Like, he's one of those microwave scorers that actually can do it fairly efficiently. He just doesn't get anybody else involved. And as long as you deploy that type of player well, I'm fine with it. Like, I just don't think that there's any market for him at the moment. But if a deal came along, sure, yeah, you could absolutely move him.
And that's the thing. Like, you can't just sit him because the last thing everyone saw was him flaming out in the playoffs. So you're not going to find a deal by not playing him.
Right. And people forget that he was actually effective with the Cavs in the regular season. Like, his numbers were legitimately good. But then the playoffs is that thing that's just going to stick freshly in your mind, and him going out there and scoring 18 points per game right now, and efficiently, I don't think it's going to sucker anybody into thinking he's that caliber of player, but I think people recognize that he does have some value in this league.
Right. I mean, you just need to move the deal, you know, and more so you need to move. Like, I think for the overall Cavs viability, they need someone to score like Clarkson is scoring. But for their long-term health, they don't need him there. Like, someone in the guard rotation, for the way they want to play, someone needs to be gone so you can give minutes to David Nwaba. You have three guys out of the rotation – David Nwaba, Kyle Korver, and J.R. Smith that could be playing. So, I mean, that's how clogged your guard spot is. You have George Hill, you have Rodney Hood, and you have Jordan Clarkson, who probably none of them should be on your team, you know, if you're two guys that have the most room to grow, which is Nwaba and Sexton, are really going to reach their potential. So Nwaba just needs minutes in general. And Sexton needs the ball, man. Like, he plays with Clarkson.
That's the problem, is he's been put in these positions basically to fail. Like, so much of – like, he's a flawed player, don't get me wrong. But we've seen, especially down the stretch in that Minnesota game where he was playing really well. And yes, Jordan Clarkson was on the floor, but the other starters were out there too, right? Like, you had guys that could find him cutting to the basket. You had guys that are going to generate some spacing there and some attention. But if he's just going out there with the bench, I mean, it's tough for him to find a rhythm. It's tough for him to find lanes to get to the basket. And he was basically – he had the opposite problem as Jetty. Jetty was avoiding contact to a flaw and kind of throwing up some wild shots where he needs to start going into guys and selling some contact there. And Colin was just completely out of control trying to draw contact at the rim. And it seemed like with the score being out of reach, the rest were just letting contact go on both sides because they're like, we want to get home. I got an early flight in the morning. I want to wrap this up quick.
Right. Yeah, I mean, their roster is all has competing goals. And they just need to move, guys. It's probably, you know. And
that's what it comes down to.
I don't know where I come out with Colin. I think there's a lot of different ways to go. I mean, he wasn't going to be an instant boom, you drop him out and he's good to go guy like Chris Paul was. Or
Kyrie.
Right. Like, he wasn't going to be that. I think he has a lot of, you know, this is an up-and-down game. And he is built for that. but he's got a lot to learn. And I don't think that you only learn by having the ball in your hands and playing, you know, 35 minutes a night. I think there's a lot he can learn about being off ball. There's a lot he can learn by existing and seeing how the team runs and learning the offense, you know. And I think it's helpful for him to exist off ball. But Clarkson, and that's, you know, the other thing, like you're running all these dribble handoffs and all this side-to-side stuff, but you're running it with Clarkson and Hood, and they don't see anybody that gets open.
Right.
Like, or even Sexton, you know, and a perk of him having the ball for 30 to 75 possessions a night would be that he's coming off these screens and looking to look for people more, which he's been a little better, actually. You know, obviously he – I don't know. It could be a lot better, but
yeah,
he's asked a little more than I thought he would.
Yeah, I think he's shown some growth within the games. Like, it's clear, especially against Atlanta, I think he just got himself a little too hyped up for that game and his decision-making was off. But I think he just benefits from having his touches go up, because when you have your touches lower, you feel like when you do get the ball, you need to make something happen right away, whereas he's not really getting the flow of the game. He's not kind of picking his spots the way that you'd like to see. And with this team, I think they have an understanding that Sexton isn't going to be that guy that goes out there and gets you 10 assists a night and creates for everybody. Like, that's not his game. So they have multiple guys that, if this system is working properly, are getting you some plays, multiple initiators, things like that. But what it's breaking down into is guys just playing your turn, my turn. And that's, it looks a lot different when it's your turn, my turn with Jordan Clarkson, Colin Sexton, and Rodney Hood than it did with Kyrie and LeBron and Love, or when they were first trying to figure out how to play with each other.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's, I don't know. I can't figure out a way to make it all work. Like, this, it's just, and you kind of expect it. It's a roster of spare parts. They lost the LeBron James, and their only major additions were Colin Sexton and Sam Dekker.
That's the problem, is that you have a bunch of specialists and stuff without kind of the catalyst that makes everything work. There's good role players here. There's good pieces here.
Are you listening, Philadelphia? There's good role players.
Exactly. Milwaukee.
Specifically George Hill.
Or San Antonio. Come on, guys. There's good role players here. It puts them in a tough spot, and that's probably why they're at their best when Jetty is looking like Turkish LeBron and getting you 22-8.
Right. Oh, man. Yeah. The
one guy that I think they're going to need to make a decision on earlier than they hoped is probably JR. Like, all of his posts, I think it's probably a little overblown. He's a guy that likes to fool around, and I don't know if he's as serious as he's kind of playing it off as, but he's clearly, the good soldier approach has kind of already ran thin, not even a week into the season, and he seems unhappy about being on outside the rotation. But at this point, there's no real reason to justify him being in the rotation, either for the short term or long term of the team.
Yeah, you know, it's another one of those things. Like, it sucks for him. He, you know, he helped the team win a title. He's got maybe a year or two left of really being able to play. He seems like he's banged up a lot in the last year. I think his body's starting to go.
Yeah, that's definitely been an issue.
So he wants to play, but he's gotten an incredibly attractive contract for the offseason. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's what the team needs to prioritize. And for me, I don't know. You know, I put a lot of stock in the player agency and player rights like that, but mm-hmm. I feel like if you sign a contract, that's kind of what it is. Like, hey, man.
Yeah, you know, signed a contract. I'm sure the Cavs want to help him as well. Like, I think if they had the option to, they'd like to send him to a good situation. And I'd like to see JR in a good situation. Like, I just recognize that this is an awkward kind of position to be in, because he's not like Kevin, where you can still get good years out of him and he can still fit with the younger team. He's just, in a sense, kind of in the way. And it doesn't benefit him to be on a rebuilding team. It doesn't benefit the Cavs to have him on a rebuilding team. And if you could get him to a situation like Houston, which is a lot less feasible that, now that Ryan Anderson isn't there, or any other team that needs shooting, I'd like to see him end up in a good spot.
Yeah, that's the other part. Like, you know, his big thing is that you can save that money next year. You save about $14 million. And there just don't seem to be a lot of contenders that have those kind of contracts, you know. Maybe you wait for a Portland to flame out and make a move on what would be a hilariously bad defensive team with Kevin Love and CJ McCollum.
There is still the nightmare situation for you that would make a little bit of sense. And that is trading him to the Bucks for Delly, and you get a trade exception for the gap in their contract.
Oh, man. I mean, that's fine. It's whatever.
But the Bucks have a lot of weird contracts. Like, I'm sure if you're the Cavs, you'd actually probably rather target someone like Tony Snell, who can at least kind of fill a need more so than Delly. I guess.
Didn't they give Plumlee like $11 million a year?
Yeah,
if I'm the Cavs, I'm extracting the most I can from them. And if that's Delly or Plumlee, it's Delly or Plumlee.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like, I think you just get him out of this situation because it has the potential to get a little bit toxic. And getting guys to buy in is already probably going to be a bit of a tall order for this season.
Yeah, I mean, you clearly need... You know, the goal, one way or another, and we're moving into another cap spike, and the goal has to be athleticism. They're missing at all positions high-end athletes. Sexton looks really athletic, but he needs to learn how to play the NBA game, so I'm not including him right now.
Right.
You know, Jetty's fine, but Jetty's not –
Jetty is sneaky athletic. Use the phrase.
Larry Nance is a premier athlete, and he's your only one. Like, of everyone on the team.
You don't have a lot on the perimeter is what you're trying to say.
Yeah. Well, really anywhere. I mean, he's your center, right? So your fours are Kevin Love and Sam Decker. Your other centers, Tristan Thompson, you have Ante Zizic. You're playing Jetty, you're playing George Hill, you're playing Jordan Clarkson, you're playing Rodney Hood. Like, those are just a bunch of negative or, you know, decent. I mean, at best, those are a bunch of okay athletes in comparison to most of the league. And especially as the shot clock has gone down and possessions are way up. I mean, scoring has exploded.
Yeah, it's crazy to see just kind of the league-wide trend in both pace and scoring. Like, nobody's really playing good defense right now except for, like, Denver, and that's not going to last.
Right. Yeah, I mean, they just need to get – and if that's, you know, them not having cap space for a couple years, which is going to be decent because the last thing you want is – you know, a mediocre team with a mountain of cap space, because they're just going to give an Allen Crabb contract out or an Evan Turner contract. They need to amass all of that.
You want them to have some cap space to round out the roster, but you don't want them to have enough to hang themselves with.
Yeah, I mean, unless they're spending it all on elite athletes, That's what they're really missing, and they're playing an up and down game with guys that are just okay, and that's probably maybe their biggest problem. I don't know, man. It's hard to rank all of their issues because they have a lot of them.
Yeah, they really do. But to me, again, the biggest thing is just the tension between trying to develop the young guys and kind of the facade of, hey, we're trying to win. And to be clear, I think it's good that they are like trying to win. Like, I genuinely believe that. And I think they're going to try to work on building good habits, but that doesn't mean if they're trying to win in the long term, that's going to result in losses now, because that means giving opportunity to the younger guys. And this is just an inherently flawed roster.
And yeah, I don't think they ever gave winning more than lip service.
No, and I think the point of tension there with why the organization doesn't want to say they're tanking or that it's a rebuild is they feel that they have pieces of the core that they want moving forward already here. Like, they don't want to tear everything down and start from scratch. I think Kevin Love is going to be part of the plans here. I don't think they're going to try to shop him in February. I think they're hoping for kind of a quick turnaround. And Colin Sexton is in there. Larry Nance is clearly in there. Jetty Osman's clearly in there. So I think the hope is that you let the young guys make mistakes. You get a high draft pick this year. And whatever cap space you have, you build a roster around those guys, hopefully to kind of accentuate their strengths. Like, if Jetty can be an average to above average starter and Sexton can be at least decent, you have the makings of an unenjoyable team, that one that isn't going to be a laughing stock, and I think that's the main objective here.
Yeah, it might start with, I need to figure out what Mike Longobardi actually does.
That, you know what, Mike Zavagno pointed that out on Twitter, and at some point we need to talk about this, because
we've been talking about it for 2 years, right? Like, I feel like
it's been a thing for a while now. Like, going back to the start of the second LeBron era there, the defense was good for a year and a half with Tyronn Lue coaching it. Then David Black got fired, and they hired Mike Lombardi there to coach the defense. But every single year,
in the playoffs,
takes over the defense in playoffs, and that shouldn't be the case. You shouldn't have a guy that literally has to give up his job every year because you don't trust him in the playoffs. Like right now, they just don't have defensive personnel. Period. But at some point, what does he do? What does he bring to the table? And I hate doing this with coaches because we have no idea what the responsibilities are. But at some point, you have to ask what exactly this guy does on defense.
This is one of the only ones that we actually know his responsibilities. Like, this is the one that's been stated, hey, Ty runs the defense, but he's the head coach now, so he brought in Mike. Like, that is the one. We don't know a lot, but we know that he's responsible for coaching the defense. Because one of the only reasons we know that is because every year in the playoffs, when their defense is awful – leading into the playoffs, the head coach says, well, I'm going to be running the defense for the playoffs and doing a lot of the planning in that regard.
Yeah, I think they got to find a new defensive coordinator. Because it's funny.
That's something that could end up getting Ty fired. Like, at least in my mind, like, loyalty to this guy could really be problematic for me. And I think overall Ty's been a fine coach. Obviously he led the team to the championship, and he was important in leading them to that championship.
And I think the offensive sets that they've been trying to run for the most part have been successful. Like, we are still talking about a team that has had little to no time together from a chemistry standpoint, trying to function in this way. Like, Kevin Love didn't play most of the preseason. Jetty Osman didn't play for most of the preseason. So I think they're a little bit behind the eight ball when it comes to executing what they want to execute against NBA level defenders, because you're not going to get that challenged in the same way defensively in practice. And especially with the Cavs defensive personnel that they have, I don't think they're really putting up a fight against the starters.
Yeah, no wonder Jordan was unstoppable in practice. We guarding him.
Exactly. But, like, I think the sets that they're trying to run are generating mostly good looks when they're running them. The issue has been when the bench comes in and kind of plays some hero ball, or guys kind of losing confidence and the assertiveness isn't there. But I think they're doing a lot of good things. I've noticed through three games, basically whoever gets the defensive rebound is pushing it up the floor, and they're doing things like that to kind of accelerate the pace, which I like. But as you said, loyalty to this guy, this defensive coordinator, is it's feeling a little problematic for the Cavs.
Yeah, it's one of a few things where you just don't see a great path forward. You know, I mean, this is year three of having no idea what their goal is defensively. They look like they don't have a plan. And that was a hallmark of the Byron Scott teams, right? Like, you watch them defend, and you're wondering, okay, well, what are you trying to do?
And we now knew what that plan was. That plan was for Byron Scott to sit on the sideline with his arms crossed.
Right. Well, and all I'm saying is, now their plan is to switch everything. And to me, switch everything is generally we're just trying to survive strategy. It's not an aggressive strategy. It's a reactive strategy. It's not one that imposes your will on who you're playing. And it just doesn't, I don't know, man.
I don't know if they need to be going for home runs defensively here. Like, oh, we're going to switch everything and jump passing lanes and we're going to be super active. Like, I don't know if the personnel is necessarily there for that. I think let's just get the basics down pat first and then work from there. Because the basics are certainly not figured out by this team right now.
Right.
Defending a role man in pick and roll situations is as basic as it gets.
Yeah, and that, another sign of how everything's pulling in 500 different directions, because half your team is over 30, so you don't want to be as patient as you probably need to with these, that's the other thing. Like, hey, defending a role man, they need to figure it out. Man, you're starting four guys that played in the finals last year. you shouldn't need to figure that out. You have the same coaching staff. And you have, George Hill, Kevin Love, Tristan Thompson, and Rodney Hood all playing in the finals. They should have it pretty well figured out. I don't know. I mean.
Yeah, there's not a lot of easy answers right now. And it's funny because, again, I'm repeating myself here, but the most important thing to me is just seeing the Cavs put together a process, like put together consistent play. I don't care what the result of the game is. I want to see growth from Jetty Osman. I want to see growth from Colin Sexton. And I think Jetty, kind of in the second half against Atlanta, he had calmed down and he was making a little bit better decisions. I don't know if it was a result of first game at home and kind of being a little too fired up or what the deal was, but how the team bounces back against Brooklyn is going to be really important to me. So I'm curious to see how that game goes, because that's another opportunity where Brooklyn's not the most talented team on the planet. You have an opportunity to go out there and look better and look like a cohesive unit.
Yeah, that'll be if they get waxed by Brooklyn. I mean, they trailed by 20 in every single game this year. If they get waxed by Brooklyn.
Yeah, then you can start pre-ordering your RJ Barrett jerseys at that point.
Yeah, man, they don't even have they wouldn't even be able to guarantee themselves the best lottery odds. That's the other thing.
Yeah, well, that's the thing is the gap in lottery odds from first to 10th is smaller than it was from first to third last year. Like, it's the incentive is just really not there, which is why I always say, like, it makes no sense these trade proposals out there to move Kevin Love for absolutely nothing. The difference between like the Cavs, who could probably finish with like the fourth worst record in the league with him, the incentive to move up like 1.5% and really still have no guarantee of a top pick.
It's
not worth it to me. The incentive's not there. You can do that in other ways. And I think if you trade those other veterans, it's going to do a good job neutering this team.
Yeah, that's really the thing. If they get waxed by Brooklyn, I mean, it's only four games, but at the same time, it's like, dude, you had no margin of error as it is. It's probably time to start looking at how to dump some of these dudes off. And that's so early and so alarmist, but it's not really alarmist because
– No, but that's where we were before the season. Like, most of us knew – that this was
a lot had to go right.
Yeah, a lot had to go right. There's talent there, but getting that talent motivated and playing the right guys and all of that, the margin for error was just really thin. So hopefully at the very least, it's entertaining like the first two games and not a tire fire like the Atlanta game. That's all we can really hope for. Hope for a good Jetty game. Hope for Colin Sexton to bounce back. That's about it. So, Ryan, thank you so much for coming on, man. Really appreciate it. Stepping up with Carter wussing out. I think Carter's going to be back on Wednesday. Happy birthday to him, by the way.
He's just out enjoying his pre-retirement, making some movies. Space Jam 2 coming out soon. So I respect Carter's decision, even though it sounds like just an awful place to exist.
Yeah, there's just not a lot of talent around him, but I hope he's making the most of it and finding things outside of his profession to enjoy in the meantime. So thanks to Ryan. Thanks again to our listeners. Remember, support the podcast. Leave a rating, review, subscribe, unsubscribe, resubscribe, cook those books. And if you want part of the Chase Down Discord chat, our exclusive chat, leave a review on iTunes. Send us a screenshot of that review to chasedownpod@gmail.com, and we will respond with an invite to that chat. So thanks again to Ryan. Thanks to our listeners. Until next time, go Cats.